Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. 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 Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello and welcome to the Spirit of Life weekly service for March 30th, 2016. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly, here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here.
Welcome to my broadcast, as well as those listening to the archive as well. Spirit of Life is a weekly physical humanism. In addition to this weekly service, ICMH also has several other educational programs, including EmpowerRecovery.com, which offers help for friends and family of alcoholics and addicts, Paranexus.org, an association of anomalous researchers, MetaphysicsInstitute.org, which offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in metaphysics and several related areas, and Thomas Francis University at TFUniversity.org, which offers standalone metaphysical courses and degrees. As we get into our program tonight, I'd like to read our abbreviated principles of belief. We have 9 principles of belief, and we have an abbreviated rendering here, but the full expression of these 9 principles of belief are available on our website at metaphysicalhumanism.org. The first of these 9 principles is do no harm, do right. Number 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. Number 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. Number 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Number 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. Number 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. Number 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And number 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. And again, you can read the full presentation of these 9 principles of belief at metaphysicalhumanism.org. Dr. Hunter.
Well, you know, we were discussing before the program what might be a really good topic tonight, and I think we kind of agreed that perception is a good topic, especially in light of, everything in the world from news to politics to, you know, daily life. And that's where I'd kind of like to start us off this evening is perspective. And one of the greatest lessons that my hypnosis teacher shared in my training back in the early 70s was that if we hold up a coffee cup and you're on one side of the table, I'm on this side of the table, and we hold it up and we see a handle. I might see the handle on the right side. You see the handle on the left side. But we can agree that it's a cup. But we still have equal and opposite perceptions of that cup. But if I turn it in a way that neither of us can really see a handle, so let's say the handle's right at me, we now have something that is just a vessel. And it's a vessel that could be used for anything. But here's the thing about an agreed upon reality. If we turn it again, we see a handle. We agree in our reality that that's a coffee cup. So this is the interesting thing about reality and perceptions of reality, perceptions of occurrences, that it, you know, we have to agree on what's the shared reality. Now, as Dr. Kelly very often says too, qualia will have us each with our own emotional perspective, our own emotional experience. And we could take this right to how is it that a whole bunch of siblings raised with one set of parents in the same house for all of their upbringing would all have a different memory of childhood and have different perceptions of their upbringing. Well, again, we get into that qualia. It's that perception. And feel free to jump in here right now, Dr. Kelly, because you're the one who can articulate qualia far better than I can.
Well, I'll just explain what qualia is. It's basically your subjective experiences. For example, if you've never been on a roller coaster before, I can explain to you and describe to you what it's like to go on a roller coaster, but you won't really know firsthand until you actually ride a roller coaster. And if we both go on a roller coaster for the first time, we're both going to have slightly different interpretations or perceptions of that. That is what qualia is. Qualia is a plural term, by the way, and it's our subjective experiences. You know, we're walking on a beach. We know what that's like. It's our qualia. But if you haven't walked on a beach, you don't have that. That's the definition.
Well, and just the same, if you got a bunch of people on a beach, each one of those is going to feel the sand differently or smell the water differently and, you know, have primary senses active or different things going on that has their memory of that experience quite different.
We can expand this topic too. Our perception is our reality, right? So the qualia, the subjective experiences we've had growing up in our life, they all affect us differently too. They all affect us differently. One person, for example, with adversity, one person might be driven, might be fired up, and they go out and they wrestle with whatever the adversity is and they conquer it. Somebody else might just basically shrivel up and have no drive, have no inspiration, have no motivation to do anything because they're just overwhelmed with it. We can all experience things differently. And it goes into, it's, you know, how we're affected by things in life, and we're different. We're made up of genes, and we're made up of our experiences, our nurturing. It's nurture via nature. So we have our genetic makeup. We have our experiences that we've had throughout our life, and that creates a mix that's different for each one of us. You know, that's why each one of us is different, and no two of us quite the same. And that's why we are perfect just the way we are. We are perfectly ourselves, and no one else can be us. So that leads then to, I mean, we can go in any direction. One is how we not only treat ourselves, but treat other people in terms of our disposition, our attitude. You know, do we have an attitude or disposition that's agreeable? Or are we disagreeable all the time? You know, people say, yeah, we have a great relationship. Yeah, we don't have that many fights, but we have a really great relationship. See, to me, that's not a great relationship. A great relationship is one that you don't fight in. You know, but I hear people say that a lot, frankly, and I think what you want, but my idea of a great relationship, you know, with a partner, spouse, is one that you don't fight, you don't raise your voice, you don't holler, you don't get physical, not even once, you know. And so we have to ask ourselves, are we agreeable or are we disagreeable? Do we tend to be one way or the other? If you tend to be disagreeable, well, that's not the way to have successful relationships. So I would recommend that you learn how to disagree without being disagreeable. And in that vein, people get disagreeable because this psychological need to be right. You know, that's one of those innate human things. We have this need to be right. Well, if you can outgrow that, if you can let that go, the need to be right, it doesn't matter whether people think you're right or wrong. You know, it's what you think. You know, you're you. And if you know who you are and why you are who you are, it really won't matter whether people think you're right or wrong. And therefore, you won't have that innate need to be right all the time. Therefore, you won't argue. You won't disagree. You won't fight for your viewpoint, thinking it's the only valid viewpoint around. That makes you more agreeable.
I think that we can tie this back into an agreeable reality. You know, if we're all holding that cup, we agree that this is a cup. I think what you're talking about is when we all want to say, no, it's not a cup. I call it it's a mug. And I am going to call this a mug, and you need to call this a mug because it's a mug. It's not a cup. And so we take out the competition, and we find the shared reality. I think very often people are in, if we want to stay in the vein of relationships, they're in relationships based on a need that's often temporary. And this is something we really need to understand about ourselves, is that in being human, our needs will wax and wane, you know, of phases of life, you know, I lost my job, I need a job, so that tends to bring out different emotions and so on. So if we understand that we put a check on those emotions and find a center, then we can find that shared reality. Like, I mean, it's two people who want completely different lifestyles ought not to be together in a relationship. You know, that's the cup. It's like there has to be that shared space, that one reality. Michael asked a question. Maybe Michael doesn't mind coming on for a moment. He had a really good question before the show, and we were discussing part of this. It took him into asking, well, you asked the question because I think it's relevant here, Michael. And in clarifying that question, it would be like taking out of it religious connotations or, you know, other kinds of belief systems where we would aspire to one set of, let's say, universal laws and principles, correct? See, and I think that you bring up a really good point in a shared reality and perceptions. The nine principles of belief, in my view, and I think they're really quite brilliant, do you think that those nine principles fall in line with what you're talking?
Hold that question for just a second, Vicki, and let's let Michael repeat what he's done, because I don't think his mic was live.
Gotcha. Is it live now? Yeah, I think you guys should be able to hear me now, and hello again. my original question was, do you believe in a objective morality or a universal ethical code that exists regardless if we acknowledge it or not, that, you know, is independent of cultural perceptions or biases?
And I went on to ask, do you feel that the nine principles of belief with ICMH might fall in line with that?
With the notion of a universal morality? I personally believe so, yes. I think there are certain things that can be argued very strongly for using reasoning and logic.
So if we were to, let's say the first one being do no harm, do right, and aspiring to a universal type of morality, some people might argue then, as Buddhists do, that don't kill a fly that could be your cousin.
Buddhists also believe in a near infinite amount of lives, so they would also say perhaps that fly is going to die regardless. I know Tibetans can be a little bit more pacifistic.
But that brings up that second part of do right. You know, I mean, in my reality, if a fly is in my house and I tell it to leave and it's not, it's the right thing for me is to kill it.
Well, right.
So that's a perception.
Obvious.
You know, but, well, obvious to you and me, but well, see, this is what I find really interesting, because I believe that I do, I like to believe that I aspire to a higher set of principles that's even greater than my own beliefs, that I have to keep debriefing myself and asking myself questions of what I've learned in my life as a perception that might not be true, if I'm truly aspiring to be a greater self and one that's more in keeping with what I can see as a universal law.
Right. Well,
that's not always an easy thing to do
because, like I was also saying earlier, we have the unfortunate constraint of only having one perspective, our own, to see things. We can do as much as we can to try to you know, put ourselves in different situations. But just like you and Dr. Kelly were saying earlier, the, you know, qualia, you don't really know until you've actually lived it.
I think that this is an extraordinary conversation, and I certainly welcome anyone in the chat room to jump in if you have any questions or you have any, you know, ideas that you'd like to share. Because perception is it's so key to where we're at in our individual lives, in our communities, as well as where we are on the planet right now. It's because we all have such differing perceptions of what life is supposed to be. But I'm more of indigenous thinking that if we're living on a planet, then there should be a harmony with nature as opposed to, you know, trying to have power over nature and take from it. But then to what degree is that okay or not okay? Because there's limitations too.
Right. Well, I mean, there's also the practical argument that it's not just about the fact that it's the right thing to do. It's the smart, practical thing to do in the long term anyway for sustainability. You know, I find that a lot of times the good thing is the best thing to do practically for the most amount of people in the long run.
You know, Zach just brought something. It is a great point. Zach just brought something up here. Empathy begins to bridge the gap. But we could say that empathy in and of itself is viewed in different ways.
You know, it's subjective.
Because what I see as empathy, because I really have put a lot of thought into that, whereas there's sympathy, empathy, and compassion. Empathy, I think, to some degree, assumes what that feels like. You know, I can assume what that's like to have sand on your feet on the beach, for instance. And I can assume what it might feel like if somebody tells me that's what you do to achieve enlightenment.
Yeah.
You know.
I think there's a lot of crossover with experiences. I mean, I think if you walk on extremely sandy dirt, you can probably guess a little bit about what sand it's on the beach feels like, especially in Florida. But, like, you know, if you've had deeply painful experiences, you can better empathize with someone else's deeply painful experiences, regardless of the cause of that deep pain.
Well, here's another question for you, because Carly just mentioned in the chat, evil is the absence of empathy. How would that fit in with what you have asked about that objective morality?
Well,
I guess we have to assume that there is such a thing as evil.
Well, I guess that would just be, you know, sociopaths, right? The lack of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
Would that then be a matter of consciousness, the lack of consciousness versus, you know, then we can get into big semantics here, because what the brain is capable of.
I think it makes it harder to be good if you are a sociopath, absolutely. I mean, but I think that natural rights of all living things is something that you come to almost intellectually. So I think that you can observe that different things have rights and a right to experience life and things without having to have that emotional component. You can just see the logic of it to have a better, more balanced world that you have a better chance of having a good life in.
See, that would be the moral, what'd you call it, moral objectives, morality?
Objective morality? Well, kind of, but you're doing it not because you think it's the right thing to do, you're doing it because you recognize it as the best thing for you personally in the long run.
Therefore because, the right thing to do.
Yeah, but not because it benefits anyone other than yourself.
Yeah, but we want a balance too. We want do right for everyone concerned. If people just did right for themselves, that would necessarily include selfishness and, you know, lack of empathy for others. Plight has to be a balance.
Yeah.
But those are good points.
I think this is a great discussion because it's then the perception of what I think is good for me. I also consider how that's going to impact onto the other, you know, people in my life or others. You know, and this is, you know, just something that popped into my mind one day, just now. So a client came to me asking if she should move to China because her boyfriend took a job in China and she was he's moving there. And I said, well, I don't know. I said, did he ask you? She goes, well, no, but we've been together for 2 years. And so I said, but if he decided to move to China, he did not consult you or ask you, then I don't think there's a discussion to be had that you're not going to China. But in her mind, you see, there's a perception here. Somebody made a decision for himself because it was good for himself. Maybe he did consider all the other ramifications and how it would affect the relationship. But then there's somebody who's been a part of his life for long enough to assume that she is also considered. So, right. And I mean, I use that very, I know it sounds like a really tacky kind of example, but I think this is what happens to a lot of people in daily life, where we're each making a decision that's right for us and maybe not telling other people that we've just made a decision and we're changing the rules. Yeah. So I think we have to consider that.
Those are good points. So, all right. Well, thanks, son, for coming on and talking about that. Good discussion.
Oh, thank you, Michael. Done. Thank you. I thought what he posed was such a really good terminology of that. It's one I certainly hadn't thought of before, that objective morality and what that would be. You know, without the emotion, without the belief systems, without the other, is what can we say is that objective morality and the shared reality. Interesting.
And I don't think you can get any more reduced than do no harm, do right, you know. I mean, if people around the world would just practice that one principle, you know, twofold, two principles in one, so to speak, you know, the whole world would dramatically improve overnight if people would just do that. And I want to just branch off a little bit here and kind of expand even further in a certain direction on this. You know, we talk about this stuff on this program, and I suspect for many people in the world, these kind of topics are maybe a bit boring. They're not as exciting as, you know, having somebody on to talk about some ghost they just saw, you know, or some UFO they just saw. But, and that's well and good, I understand that. You know, the stuff that we talk about on this program, for the most part, are things that improve lives. And while they may not be the most exciting, gripping topics there are, they are absolutely fundamental to our well-being, to everybody's well-being. And that's what the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism is about. You know, talking about objective morality, that's what we're shooting for, in a sense. We're trying to create a spiritual philosophy here that is grounded, is reasonable, brings hope, and is something that will make lives better. And that's what IMH Church is for. So I know that many who are listening to this program tonight are members of ICMH Church. And that's great. And that's something that everyone should be proud of. I mean, we can sometimes take it for granted, and I certainly don't toot the horn that much about it. But, you know, in my opinion, it's the healthiest spiritual philosophy on the planet, because it's not that complicated. It's healthy, and it brings about positive results. And so I want to try to encourage that same mindset, that same belief, that same attitude in our members too. Be proud of this. A lot of people say, well, metaphysics, you know, you're just a bunch of nut jobs, you're scammers, you're, you know, whatever, because you believe in all this stuff. Well, you know, Church of Metaphysical Humanism, pretty grounded in its beliefs. We're not so open-minded our brains fall out, but we still are open-minded enough to explore different hypotheses, different perspectives, different concepts. It doesn't mean we automatically believe in everything. And, you know, reincarnation is one. That's a good example right now. We neither believe nor disbelieve in reincarnation. Why? Because there's just not enough good evidence one way or the other to sink our teeth in. To, you know, now for some people, they have all the evidence they need. Great, good. But we really try to look at things in an objective way, and not go too far out on a limb, but keep it close a little bit, keep it down to earth a little bit, until such time as we have a good, reasonable, defensible basis for the belief in such things as that, or anything else for that matter. So when you are involved in this, you can be proud of this. This is a great thing. This is something that can make a huge difference in the world if we could just spread the word enough, if we could just get enough people to buy into it. If not the entire set of nine principles of belief, at least the first one, do no harm, do right, and really mean it, and expand on that, like paying it forward and being agreeable, not disagreeable with people, and trying to do the right thing and the kind thing as the opportunities arise. And we could even expand a little bit off that. Many of those listening to us right now are students. You know, I got an email from a student who's been with us many months, maybe a year or more, and she's a good student. And she's done a nice job. She's just gotten into the master's program. And she was telling me how her family has just given her a real hard time. She's young, early 20s, and she wants to make a go of metaphysics. And she's getting a lot of demeaning talk from her family. They basically say it's not real. They say it's, it's fake. You know, lots of demeaning type things, and they're putting her down. And, you know, it's interesting because we teach how to deal with that. And I just had a reminder of those, and she's fine. But, you know, the people who do that kind of thing are – I know that her family has good intentions. They mean well. They don't want to see their daughter or their sister or whoever being taken for a ride by anyone. But they haven't done their homework. Therefore, they remain ignorant. And there are many, I'm sure many of our students have run into that. People put them down, say stupid things, not so much because they want to be mean, but because they're just ignorant. They haven't done their homework. They haven't done their research. All they got to do is go on our church site and listen to some of these programs, watch some of our videos from when we had the center, you know, and tell me that that's a bunch of crap. Tell me that that's fake. It's not. It's just that we need to educate the world. Go ahead, Dr. Hunter.
If anybody would like a card drawn from our Inner Oracle Self-Discovery cards, I'd be happy to do that for you now. This it's a great conversation. It's a really important that we discuss realities, perceptions, and what we hopefully all aspire to. And then we have what's really kind of going on in our individual lives. So if there's something that can kind of inspire a thought, can inspire our consciousness to open up a little bit, then that's what these cards are for, and that's what we're going to do right now. I do see that Francis, I think you're first up, Francis, so I am pulling a card right now, past, present, and future. It is number 4. And I'm going to read that to you right now, so maybe this will resonate for you. The 3 universal laws of personal responsibility are, 1, you're accountable for your past, present, and future. 2, don't expect others to do for you what you can and should do for yourself. 3, don't do for others what they can and should do for themselves. Remember, present circumstances reflect past choices. Embrace responsibility and move forward with renewed vigor. I like that card, actually. You know, just because we can say I am responsible for my past, we remember that we're only making decisions and going forward with what we know at that time. Today we know more. So now you can move forward, you know, with kind of a new sense of self and positive energy. So I hope that makes sense to you for today, Francis. I know I always resonate. Number 4.
And it says
past, present, and future.
Okay.
And I see Tabitha is next up. Nice to see you all here, by the way. Okay, Tabitha, number 6, boundaries. A good reminder for all of us. It's important for you to establish clear boundaries for yourself. Equally, it's necessary to be aware of others and to not overstep or encroach on their boundaries. This is a mark of a self-complete individual. Reassess and assertively protect your healthy boundaries while looking to see if you are overstepping elsewhere. Begin with asking yourself, who owns me? And I tell you, boundaries is something that, you know, each of us looks at every single day. So there might be something there just for today that you can resonate with that, Tabitha, and go forward. Just know that we're all learning about that one. Ah, she said, yes, she can relate to that. Okay. All right, Carly is up next. Let's see, Carly, I got one here. Education, number 39. That's in the life skills suit. 39 is continual education is the key to individual and collective consciousness and personal success. Commit yourself to lifelong learning, educating yourself continually. If you don't know something, first look for the answers yourself, then ask if necessary. Gain education and advice through various sources, including people, but always strive to find your own answers. Look for lessons in life experience, situations, and circumstances. Make it your adage to listen, think, learn, grow, and live. You know, I think that maybe just pulling that card is that little tap on the shoulder to say, hey, there's something more to learn today. So don't go forward too quickly without kind of reassessing, reevaluating, getting more information. Okay, so.
Zach, I believe, is next.
Are you up, Zach? Do you want, Zach, do you want the third from the left or the third from the right? So unless he answers me really quickly, I'm just going to go with third from the left. Zach is yours. Positive consciousness, number 13. It's our soul's nature, natural inclination to be positive. Therefore, positive consciousness transcends positive thinking. As human beings, we can find ourselves with the need to filter negativities and ill will. Be at peace with your natural self and continue displaying goodwill toward others. Don't hate or hold hatred in your heart. Maintain your positive attitude, even in the face of obstacles and discouragements, for they are temporary. You know, I will say that, you know, knowing you a little bit, Zach, that you are positive and you do forge ahead, I think that this is just one of those little reminders that, you know, if people are kind of in your way, and always says any positive attitude toward exercise, and that too. But, you know, if some things are just kind of in your way, you just take on a really good attitude and say, no, this is mine, I got this. So positive consciousness.
Let's go back to boundaries for a moment.
Sure.
A couple of comments in the chat room, boundaries are hard. And, you know, first glance, that sounds right. That sounds right. Let's take a look at it deeper. You know, are boundaries hard? Really, are they hard? And they can be. I'll give you that. They can be. However, the cool thing is that, especially for our students, they learn how to not only set boundaries, but also how to protect boundaries in the first few courses in the bachelor's program. And boundaries can be hard if you're completely adverse to confrontation. If you don't like confrontation, boundaries, setting boundaries, maintaining boundaries are going to be a lot harder. It's made a lot easier by having a good, healthy self-concept, a good, healthy self-esteem, and respecting yourself more than you respect others. Now, I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, you still respect other people in a healthy way, but when it comes to you, who do you respect more, you or yourself or them? When we allow others to cross our boundaries, who owns us? Think about that for a moment. If we allow others to cross our boundaries, they own us. And we can't allow that. So it's not, when we maintain our boundaries, it's not so much that we're interested in fighting. And we can say that, look, you know, I'm not interested in fighting. However, what you've just done is a boundary violation on me, and I can't allow that. So I'm going to ask you, please, don't do that again. Don't ask that again. Don't, whatever it is. And that's all you got to do. Well, if you really love me, you wouldn't do that. Excuse me, but you know, that is a boundary violation. That is assuming. It's not only is it's unhealthy. I do love you, but I'm not going to let you take advantage of me, and I won't take advantage of you. But you see, and do you see how I'm saying that in a calm voice? I don't need to argue. I don't need to yell. You know, even if somebody does an egregious boundary violation, you look at them in the eye, you firmly say, when you do that, I feel whatever way you feel. I feel angry. Can I ask you to not ever do that again? And then you shut up while you're still maintaining your eye contact. Well, you know, it's just who I am. I understand that. But when you do that, I feel angry. Can I ask you to not do that again? You shut up and you stare at them. You look at them in the eye. You maintain that eye contact. If that doesn't do it, if they keep doing it, then you might have to say it again. When you do this, it makes me angry. I feel angry. Not it makes me angry. I feel angry. Can I ask you to not ever do that again? And if they, whatever they say, now you've done this before and I've asked you to not do it again, but you still are doing it. If you continue to do it, it's going to require me to reevaluate our relationship. Therefore, can I ask you to not do that again? And you shut up and you maintain that eye contact. So when it comes to boundaries, if you have a good, healthy self-concept and you value the respect for yourself more than them, it's not going to be as hard as you think. And if you approach it in that same way, when you do this, I feel this way, can I ask you to do this or to not do it, whatever it is, it's going to be much easier. That's assertiveness, and it uses word softeners, and you're not disagreeable, you're not antagonistic, you're just protecting your boundaries.
You know, I'd like to share a story that someone just told me about 2 days ago. She was in quite a bit of a dilemma, actually, a friend of mine. And she's from a, I'll say this clearly, a white family, a small, you know, kind of community. But her son has married someone of color. And a woman she's known for about 40 years said, I can't believe you let him marry a darkie. And she was so upset that, I mean, she's trying to debrief herself through the shock. And what does she do? She's got a history with this woman, but it was the biggest boundary violation that she'd ever experienced. And I said, well, I know what I do with those kinds of things, but this is your call. I just don't ever talk to somebody like that again. The problem with that is we miss the friendship. We will grieve for the friendship, but we will grieve the friendship that we thought we had, not with the real individual. Because prior to now, there had been no cause for such a discussion that she would know that her friend is a bigot. So she did call me back the next day and said, I am going face to face to my friend's house and tell her that we can't be friends anymore. But I need to do this to her face, not on the phone, not in a text, not in an email. She said, it is such a huge, it has such a huge impact on my family. I am standing up for what I believe in. I'm standing up for my family. And she can't be a part of it. And she said, I'm thinking about grandchildren. I'm thinking about those to come. And unless we stand up to this and tell people it's not acceptable and what the consequences are, she said that it'll continue. So, well, I, you know, she just about brought me to tears that she was, you know, willing to make that kind of stand in her life. It's huge. So that's taking it to an extreme. Most boundary violations occur in much smaller ways, you know, in little things in relationships. But we do encounter these other kinds of boundary violations that we do have to, and I don't think that that's being confrontational in as much as it's being assertive to make, you know, to say, I have to make a decision for myself about my life, my family, as much as it's and my community. So kudos to her.
And, you know, speaking of these boundaries, you know, a comment was made about boundaries within the family, especially when it's an in-law, something like that, you know, it can be difficult. And especially for a young newlywed, you know, and it can be on both sides. Typically, it's going to be the wife, the daughter-in-law, but not always. It can be the son-in-law, too. But, you know, yeah, you know, you get wacky mother-in-law or whatever, you know, standing up because you don't want to introduce confrontation into the relationship, and then how will that affect the relationship you have with your spouse, and so on and so forth. But again, I want to reiterate that the only thing that truly matters in life is the relationship we have with ourselves. Because if the relationship we have with ourselves is a good one, we're going to fare well. We're going to do fine unless the other people can't accept us for who we are. And if we cave in and we let our in-laws or whoever, family members, violate our boundaries because we're just, well, we're afraid to speak up or we don't want to, you know, cause friction, that sort of thing, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when it's going to happen again. And it's, it might be several years down the pike, but it's all going to come to a head sooner or later. And so if we establish those healthy boundaries in the beginning, all the better. And we can do it very calmly, like I did just some examples a few minutes ago. We can be very calm. I'm sorry, but please don't talk to me that way. It's a violation of my boundaries, and I respect myself too much to listen to it. And so you have to stick up for yourself, because people who violate boundaries are aggressive. They're bullies to one extent or another. And the only language that bullies understand is directness. In other words, you stand up for yourself in the appropriate way. That's the only language they will understand. They may not shut up immediately because they're trying to save face, but they'll get the message. And it should be the evaluation attempts. Okay. I will turn. Is this any better?
If I can inject here, while you're correcting that, is that Carly said she does have a hard time setting boundaries, but she's even more terrified of crossing other people's boundaries. And I think that the don't give unsolicited advice is a perfect way to start. And the other is don't do for others what they can and should do for themselves, which doesn't mean you can't lend a hand. But otherwise, Carly, honestly, other people are free to make their choices too. Go ahead.
Well, if you want to avoid crossing other people's boundary, do no harm, do right. And you will likely not cross anybody's boundaries. If you figure out that you have inadvertently, you can apologize. Look, I didn't mean to do that. It was an inadvertent thing. I didn't think. I apologize. That's it.
Simple. Right. In that way. You know, I might just mention, because there's a talk of a mother-in-law, there's two things I think to keep in mind. One is to be respectful and validate the mother, even though she's described here as a crazy mother-in-law. It's to certainly validate, to say, you know, you've done a great job raising your kids. You've, you know, and gee, you're a good cook, or, you know, something. But we certainly know so-and-so differently. He's my husband. And when we're in my house, I really like to, I don't know, cook the potatoes this way. You know, so it's just asserting, but you validate other people. And then you kind of, that's an acknowledgement. And then you can say that this is my house and this is kind of the way I do things. I certainly like to learn a new way, but so, you know, Dr. Angie's saying she was arguing with her in-laws once over how dinner was cooked too. You know, these are small little things, but understand that people are, it's a power play. And even though sometimes it's very innocent and people aren't even aware they're doing it, it has to do with power and control and bullying to some degree. But that's because of their own neediness. So acknowledge and then take your stand. And hopefully do it in a good way that, you know, it's not going to go into something else. But, you know, we've had a great show tonight. This is certainly perception, reality, and, you know, how we start to set up our lives where we find is an agreeable center place versus respecting, you know, everybody else's rights to make their choices too, which in turn goes to boundaries. So good program.
All right, folks, we appreciate everybody's time tonight. Thanks for joining us. Tell other people about the program. Tell other people about not only the church, but our schools, which teach all of these principles we talk about each week. We appreciate those listening to the archives. Thanks to Michael Kelly for producing the program, as well as coming on tonight for a bit. Thanks to Dr. Hunter for joining me on this, and we'll see you next week. Until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night.
Good night.